It is Monday, September 6th for Patreon subscribers, Labor Day. Hope everyone is enjoying a day off of work. And I need to be educated. I should have looked this up. I'm not entirely sure what Labor Day is for. It's just a day off work for people to, spend time with family. Is that correct? And I'm very clear on what Memorial Day is, but Labor Day seems like an odd concept to me. But anyways, wow. That's all I can say about that. Wow. What a weekend of football. I don't remember an opening weekend of football that was that amazing, really ever. I mean, the games that this took me like probably 13 to 15 hours to prep this show, because usually there's only like two games that matter or entertaining, and you can kind of buzz through the rest and kind of just give quick thoughts. But holy cow, I mean, we got it all for you right now. From Florida State, Notre Dame, and the coaching debacle that really lost them the game, but and almost hit my prediction. I went, 5-for-6? And that Florida State upset would have been the 6th, and it should have happened. You guys know that. I know that. I mean, God, it was so close. And then obviously we're going to go through the Georgia-Clemson game, the Penn State-Wisconsin game, Iowa-Indiana. We're going to recap a couple of just kind of last thoughts on the Ohio State-Minnesota game and where Ohio State is at. We're going to run through conference by conference to kind of see where everyone's at. Where's the SEC right now after a weekend that was honestly not that convincing? We had some big teams in the top 25 fall, and even bigger teams that looked like shit, like Oklahoma and Iowa State. And we're going to go through all of it, talk about all of it. So got a ton to discuss, couple kind of house cleaning things to get out of the way. First and foremost, if you are in Ohio or want to come to Ohio for this Oregon-Ohio State game, you have to come hang out at Braxton Miller's Charging on Lane tailgate. Go to Eventbrite, type in charging with a 1 instead of an I. It'll pop up. $50, all you can eat. We got wings from Shade on the Canal, a bunch of great food. I mean, we got sandwiches. It's not nasty burgers and hot dogs. We got great food. Screwball Peanut Butter Whiskey is going to have a couple different game day drinks, Buckeye-themed drinks. We got Buckeye Vodka providing all the vodka. We got domestic beer. You name it, we got it. It is going to be an awesome experience, a watch party, right? For those of you that don't go to the game, we're going to be there for 6-7 hours. Braxton, myself, and a slew of other people watching the show and then watching the game. So come check it out. Also want to drop a mention for our Patreon, because we're back fully live. Just a couple tiers to go through, and I'll make it really quick. $2.99 a month, $3. You get a custom RSS feed that's right on your phone. You don't have to go to iTunes, Spotify, none of it. It's just right on your phone, and you get everything we do. Our Menace to Picks podcast, this podcast, behind the scenes exclusive podcast. We're going to start doing a morning show every now and then, which is going to be really cool for Patreon subscribers only. You get it all on the $3 feed. The $5 tier, you get episodes early. This episode is going to be out Monday at 5:00 for Patreon and won't go out to the public till Tuesday. So if you're dying for your Buckeye fix, $5 a month, man. It ain't a lot of money. Subscribe now, support the show, and get it early. Then $10 a month, video content. $20 a month, VIP access, all kinds of stuff for the VIPs. We're doing a fantasy football league. If you haven't signed up, that draft is Tuesday, so you might, if you didn't listen to this quickly, you might be late, but I posted about it on Patreon. $30, our Menace tier is my favorite tier. We have a group text. It's much more intimate. Check that out. We text pretty much all day, every day. And then our last tier is a $50 a month. It's kind of my way of finding who is committed to this brand and wants to be a direct influence as a board of a director member. Obviously, if this grows big enough at some point, that is not something you would pay to do. That is something that that we would need as a company. So we're getting there, almost there. But anyways, that's kind of the house cleaning. Finally, we got an ad on the show. I'm going to warn you now, it's going to be halfway through. It's going to be a long show, so it's not going to be ad filled outside of that minute and a half that you just listened right there. But ton to talk about, including a dumbass sports media personality of the week. But enough about that, man. Let's get to the show.
Watches downfield. It's Olave. He's got a touchdown, Ohio State.
Why am I talking to you? You're not even in football.
Yeah.
Did you even play to the high school level? You took journalism. It's a bunch of nerds interrupting people who know what they're doing.
It goes to the corner, dives to the corner. He didn't get there. No, they say he did. And Indiana wins.
The commissioner could literally punt a baby with his wingtips on. I'm still going to watch on Sunday.
Looking for the deep ball. Touchdown, Ohio State, Garrett Olsen.
I don't condone the man's actions, but it's football. I have to watch it. This is all I have.
On first down, it's Breece Hall. He doesn't go down.
I wasn't going to hit a woman, but then that guy in the Ravens did it, so I guess it's okay.
Welcome to episode 159 of Menace to Sports. I am Zach Smith, your host. You should know that by now, 159 episodes in. If you could do me a favor, I never asked to do this, but I get criticized a lot from people that know podcasts. They say that this will help my podcast grow. If you don't subscribe, please subscribe. And if you do subscribe, if you go leave a five-star rating and write a little sentence or two about why you love this show, I guess it'll help my show get discovered and grow. And I think that's something that if you like the show, we all want to see happen. So that was my last plug. Let's start this off with our dumbass sports media personality of the week, hashtag DASMP. And I hate to do it, but you hate to see it. But Joel Klatt is this week's dumbass sports media personality. And I really like Joel Klatt. I think he's phenomenal. One of the best in the industry. But his top 10 came out and I am fucking confused. As should you be. Number one, Bama. I get it. Absolutely. No one will argue that. Georgia, two. There could be an argument made, right? They need to get some people back from injury. I get that. Number three, Oklahoma over Ohio State. Did you hear that? Oklahoma over Ohio State. Oklahoma just beat Tulane 40-35. They almost got upset. I mean, Spencer Rattler looked bad. The defense looked bad. Oklahoma, and everyone knows how I felt about Oklahoma preseason. They cannot be number three coming out of week one. They might be able to work back up there. But number three, Oklahoma, good Lord. Then number four, he has Ohio State. Number five, get this shit, Clemson. Like, what? Clemson just lost. They looked terrible. Their defense, I guess, looked okay, but their offense was disgusting. And it's not like they were injury-ridden. Like, that is their offense. I know DJ Uiagalelei didn't play great. But their skill on the perimeter, their offensive line, everything was bad. Their run game is gone. Clemson at five. A&M six, played nobody. Cincy seven, had a convincing win, granted over, who was it, Miami of Ohio. Notre Dame eight, after they almost lost, should have lost to Florida State. Notre Dame eight, Florida nine, unimpressive against FAU. And then Iowa, who had one of the most convincing wins outside of Bama in the country, is at 10. How would you not put, after watching all the football, I just watched 20 hours of football in the last 2 days. If you actually study it and watch it, how could you put Iowa at 10 behind Florida and Notre Dame? That's what I want to know. Clemson, if you want to give them a pass and put them above an Iowa, great. I mean, above A&M, I think that's kind of comical. I think A&M is a better team right now than Clemson, but I just top 10 had me scratching my head across the board. I was very, very, very confused. And that brings me to my next point, kind of what the mission of the show, right? Not mission of the show, but what I'd like to see happen. I want to see the Big Ten catch the SEC. So you look at the games this weekend. Granted, it's week one. It's just 1 week. So you can't really put all of your eggs into this basket. But look at what the SEC did compared to the country, right? You go through Bama, they're in a world of their own. The SEC is riding their waves hard. They're on their coattails. Some of these SEC teams are sleeping or passed out or dead on Bama's coattails wearing that SEC patch on their jerseys. They really are. I mean, they dominated Miami. I thought Miami had a chance to give them a game if Derek King played well. I was dead wrong. No one is even in a class with Bama from what I saw. Georgia, I'll give it to them. Defense, unbelievable. Might be the best defense in the country. Best defense I saw this weekend. But their offense was putrid. Though all injured, I get it. They have like every receiver that ever wore a Georgia jersey is injured right now. They found a way to dominate a very talented Clemson team. I mean, those kids are all four stars, five stars. That's a talented team. They dominated them. Their defense was ridiculous. So I'll give those two, right? That was two really great performances from the SEC. Then LSU goes out west, gets exposed by UCLA. Florida, below average. I mean, really, really below average against FAU. Mississippi State beats La Tech by one. Missouri beats Central Michigan by 10. Now, Auburn dominated Akron. A&M dominated Kent State. Congratulations. Here's your fucking cookie. Tennessee was average at best against Bowling Green. South Carolina did destroy an 0-2 Eastern Illinois team. And Vandy was embarrassed by East Tennessee State. So who was impressive at all? We will reserve judgment on teams like the SEC versus MAC challenge that we like Auburn and A&M. We'll wait to see them. Bama, very impressive. Georgia, dominant defense. Other than that, meh. We'll see, right? I didn't see anything that I was like, wow, this conference is loaded top to bottom at all. The Big 12 was embarrassing. Honestly, the best looking Big 12 team this weekend was Texas. They played a ranked Raging Cajun team and they won by 20 points. They actually looked pretty good. Bijan Robinson, the whole crew, Sark has that team looking like a much better version of the Tom Hermanites. Oklahoma was almost upset by Tulane. Iowa State looked like dog shit in a 16-10 win over Northern Iowa. Kansas State looked solid. They beat Stanford 24-7. Baylor struggled with Texas State. Oklahoma State struggled with Missouri State. Just yuck. Outside of Texas, yuck for the Big 12. ACC, North Carolina was the team, one of the teams that might have a shot to unseat Clemson. They get upset by VTech. Charlotte beat Duke. Miami was blown out by Bama. Clemson can't move the ball the length of your dick against Georgia. BC and Pitt look great against high school teams. Northern Illinois beat Georgia Tech. Florida State was probably the most impressive team in the conference in their loss to Notre Dame. So that's what the ACC is working with. I guess Virginia Tech, you could give them credit, right? They beat a really, really on paper good North Carolina team. So Florida State is the, I guess, setting the pace in the ACC. You love to see it if it's true. Then you look at the Big Ten. One, first and foremost, there was five conference clashes. There was not MAC cupcake matchups. Ohio State's performance was somewhere in between Bama and Georgia. Wasn't overly impressive and wasn't dominant like Bama, but their offense looked far better than Georgia. Their defense, not even close, but you know, so similar to Georgia. Penn State and Wisconsin looked to have dominant defenses, top five defenses in the country. Iowa just absolutely steamrolled Indiana, who was supposed to be good and everyone told me was good. Only I think this show was the only show that said Indiana is not going to be very good this year. That was a very impressive win for Iowa. Maryland shows signs of major improvement and beat West Virginia. Rutgers destroyed Temple. Michigan State looked, I mean, night and day improved from last year. I mean, Spartan running back Kenneth Walker III ran for 264 yards in the opener against Northwestern. Their Michigan State's leading rusher in 2020 only had 219 rushing yards all season. So Michigan State has improved. I mean, it's far too early to say which conference could give the SEC a run for their money, but the Big Ten as a whole, it impressed me on that road to take on the Southern Giant. They really did. The SEC was unimpressive and the Big Ten impressed. Simple as that. If you ended the season today, no more games. Let's say, I don't know, knock on wood. COVID canceled the season. The Big Ten was the best conference this year through one game, albeit, right? Through one game. I'm going to start with it, and I wasn't even going to talk about this, but then Eddie O had a video come out walking into the stadium where a fan was talking shit to him, and he said, bring your ass down here. Bring your ass down in a sissy blue shirt. In a sissy blue shirt. This man doesn't know how to not talk shit. By the way, Ed, you've been fucking awful as a head coach outside of when you had Joe Burrow and Joe Brady running the most prolific offense maybe in the history of college football. I mean, you've been terrible as a head coach everywhere, right? He's Ole Miss, you name it, USC as an interim, and then LSU. I mean, he's been terrible outside of 1 year when he had arguably the most ridiculous offense to ever play, right? The game was absolutely disgustingly sloppy-ass game. LSU, 18 missed tackles, almost 20 missed tackles. UCLA had 13. Dorian Thompson-Robinson, by the way, shout out Bishop Gorman, Tate Martell's backup in high school. I mean, he's 1-for-2 on deep balls, 4-for-7 over 10 yards. The only intermediate throws he threw were between the hashes, so they didn't ask him to do much at all. The difference was UCLA could run the ball and LSU couldn't. I mean, they had almost 5 yards per game. If you guys have heard me talk about him, Justin Fry's the OC, O-line coach, best O-line coach in the country. Him and the guy at Florida State, Alex Atkins, I think are the two best O-line coaches in America. He's running the offense, 5 yards per carry compared to 2 yards per carry for old Eddie O. Neither defense was impressive. Both teams had a turnover. It came down to running the football and scoring the end, and UCLA did just that. And then they did the get the gat dance that LSU did at the White House. It was awesome. And I mean, UCLA is not taking any time to send shots across social media. I hear that chant in the background, SEC, SEC, SEC. Awful weekend for the SEC. But I just wanted to touch on that briefly before we get into kind of the games that, I think, you know, they were big-time games. First and foremost, Notre Dame-Florida State last night, I had to start with it. I mean, I've not had that kind of energy during a game. I don't know, maybe I guess the Clemson-Ohio State game in the playoffs. But wow! First of all, Jack Cohn, the transfer from Wisconsin, absolute stud. Stud. And it makes you wonder, like, is Wisconsin sitting there like, son of a bitch, a lot like Georgia with Jake Fromm watching Justin Fields dominate. Did you make the right choice? It wasn't really a choice, I guess. Jack Cohn had Wisconsin issues. They didn't have an issue with him. And there's all kinds of rumors about what happened there. I covered him when he transferred. Not trying to go back to that. But 26 of 35, 366 yards, 4 touchdowns, and 0 interceptions. All you stat chasers are going to say, that's not true. He had an interception. Save that bullshit. He had 1 interception on a Hail Mary at the end to try to like score a freak touchdown. They intercepted it and fell down. I don't even count that shit. That kid went 26 to 35, almost 400 yards, 4 touchdowns, 0 picks. Wow. Now, I did try to tell you. Let's not forget now. I did try to tell you. Notre Dame would not be able to run the ball worth a shit. They lost everyone up front, and boy, What did that ring true? 1.9 yards per carry for the Golden Domers without the best offensive line in college football that they had last year. Kyren Williams, who's their was their all everything back last year, 18 carries, 42 yards, 2.3 yards per carry with a long. The longest run he had was 7 yards. They did have the kid that I will say was inconsistent but impressed me the most on offense for Notre Dame was Michael Mayer, their tight end. Everyone talks about him, the number one tight end in the country. I'll be honest, he has ability, but he ain't no number one tight end in the country. He had 3 critical drops, critical drops. One would have been the game winner at the end of the fourth quarter. They could have just chipped the field goal in without overtime. They would have won the game. He flat dropped 3 huge ones. He had 9 catches, 120 yards, 1 touchdown. I see. I get it. He showed flashes. But you can't be the best tight end in America and have 3 drops, let alone 3 critical drops in a game like that? No. Now, Kevin Austin, the wideout that I told you about, I recruited him. He's out of South Florida, private school down there. Great kid. I mean, he's finally healthy. He was a matchup nightmare for Florida State. He is 6'2", 215, and a strong-ass, big physical receiver. I really like him. He's more of a possession guy. Now, he got behind Florida State a little bit, but he impressed me. He did. Kyren Williams had 1 explosive play in the throw game, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But otherwise, he was just a non-factor in the game. Now, you know who was a factor in the game? Jermaine Johnson II, the transfer from Georgia. Shout out Coach JB, real Coach JB from Last Chance U on Netflix. He played for him. JUCO kid from Coach JB. Went to Georgia, was rotating, wasn't playing a ton. Georgia loved him, but he said, no, I need to play more. So he transfers to Florida State. This sumbitch was unstoppable, unblockable. He disrupted Notre Dame all day long. It was unreal. 7 tackles, 1.5 sacks, 2 tackles for loss. He was in a backfield all night. It was insane. So Florida State did a great job on defense, and Notre Dame struggled on offense in a big way. Outside of Jack Cohn, who was able to throw the shit out of the ball, they couldn't run the ball, and that's why it was a close game. When you look at Notre Dame's defense, and I want to talk about this for a minute because everyone is still, prior to this game, when Ohio State's defense didn't look locked down, it was calling from the top of the mountains. When will Ohio State, do you think it's likely they will fire Kerry Combs and bring in Marcus Freeman? I like Marcus Freeman a lot. I know him personally. I think he's a really good football coach. But when it was brought up that he was, you know, might get brought over to Ohio State as the coordinator, and even now people are singing his praises, I ask, why do you think Marcus Freeman's such a dominant defensive coach? Because Marcus Freeman caught the luxury of being a sexy name in the coaching industry. That's what it is, right? He's at Cincinnati, and their defense is outstanding. Part of that is personnel. Part of that is scheme. Oh, by the way, he's running Luke Fickell's defense. Luke Fickell has been a defensive coordinator for a long time on very successful defenses. So although he has input, I mean, this is Luke's defense, right? So I'm not saying Marcus Freeman's not a great coach, but what makes you think he's like the savior? This is the problem with the coaching industry and fans is all of a sudden it's like, oh, Jim Harbaugh's good, definitely going to win us a national championship in Michigan. It's Jim Harbaugh. It's like, what? Why do you think that? Can Jim Harbaugh recruit at Michigan? No. He's never done that. He was at Stanford recruiting a whole different world. In the NFL, he had success. That doesn't mean shit about Michigan. No different than Marcus Freeman. You take him out of Luke Fickell's program, throw him in Notre Dame. What? They don't have personnel. Come on. On paper, they have better players than Cincinnati. That defense did not look good. Everyone's going to talk about the McKenzie Milton story, Florida State, and I will touch on it for a second, but it's already the most overplayed story in college football. Not because it's not fantastic. Everyone is talking about it, and I couldn't even listen to the announcers down the stretch of the game because it's all they wanted to talk about. Joe Tessitore just wanted to talk about McKenzie Milton every time. It was like McKenzie Milton dropped the ball, and he dove on it, and Joe Tessitore's like, it's just amazing that this kid, 3 years from playing a game with a bad knee, can fall on a ball that effectively. You're like, what the fuck? Shut up, Joe. Jesus, man, we get it. It's an amazing story. Can we watch the football game and talk about what's going on? I think the most impressive play he had was with 3 minutes and 12 seconds in the fourth quarter. They're driving down, trying to tie the game. He goes, it's a run play with a smoke screen, right? Where if he has numbers, he pulls it, doesn't hand it off, and throws it to the receiver. If it was, go on YouTube and find it if they have the full game out there. The receiver has an MA, doesn't run the smoke screen. McKenzie pulls up to throw it. The running back's already gone. The minute he saw the receiver busted and didn't run it, he put his foot in the ground and went forward and got 5 yards. Quarterbacks, that was what JT Barrett was amazing at. was on bad plays, broken plays. He got you to second and six or second and five. Quarterbacks that can do that are so undervalued, and that kid has it. He does it. He understands field position, getting behind the chains, the game. It was amazing. That was the best play he made all game. I don't care about the throws, the rollouts. That play right there told me more about this kid than anything else. Now, the coaching decisions in that game still have me fucking livid because I would have went 6-for-6 on my preview show. Livid. The first one, 3rd and 17. Do you know what the percentage is of converting 3rd and 17? It's like 8%, right? So just play coverage. Even if they complete it, get them on the ground and get the ball back. But they don't. Florida State sends a max blitz, and Florida State, unbelievably, great play call. I don't know how or why they thought they would max blitz. They call a little screen pass to Kyren Williams, and that was Notre Dame's one big play of the game, right? Or I'm sorry, outside of some Kevin Austin throws downfield, right? That was their big play of the game. That was Kyren Williams' one big play of the game because they decided to max blitz on 3rd and 17, the dumbest fucking thing I've ever seen on it from a defensive coordinator, maybe ever. Not ever. That's exaggerating, but good Lord. The next one, they get the ball, right? In the fourth quarter, they go Wildcat. I like Wildcat. It's got to be a sprinkle, and it's got to be well thought out, well executed, but I do like Wildcat. Most people don't. They run Wildcat on 2nd and 3rd down, and then on 4th down on your own 30-yard line, you elect to go for it, throw a little bullshit pass, and you don't convert. One, if you are that aggressive, why are you in Wildcat on 2nd and 3rd down, maybe on 2nd or maybe on 3rd, one of the two, but both downs and then you get stuffed and then you decide not to punt. That's just not a well thought out drive or plan, right? Really poorly thought out. And then why are you going for it on 4th down on your own 30-yard line? Like, you better be running something that you have so much conviction it's going to work, right? It's like, it's a sure thing because you, I mean, they lost the game on that play, right? They lost the game on that play. And then the other play everyone wants to talk about is when Mike Norvell iced his own kicker. I mean, that's tough, right? Hindsight's 20-20. He nailed the 50-yarder after they called timeout and the whistle, but the percentages say that Norvell made the right call. I mean, it was a huge jump in field position, a much shorter field goal. I know he missed it, and he made the first one. Hindsight's 20-20. Everyone actually, I mean, I think everyone knew that was going to happen, right? But I think he made the right call. You need the percentage of making that field goal went up dramatically by moving that ball up by challenging the forward pass or fumble. I think it was the absolute right call. I will shit on the coaching decisions on the other two and a couple other ones. I will not on the review of that field position. That's the right call analytically. He made it. Overall, Florida State outplayed Notre Dame. 5.5 yards per carry to 1.9. 44% on 3rd down to 35%. They outgained Notre Dame. The difference was, in my opinion, Mackenzie Milton didn't start, and Kyle Hamilton showed why he is the top safety in the United States of America. He was outstanding. He had the one interception, which was absolutely great coverage on a corner route. He undercut it, picked it off. Great play. But the interception he made rolling from the far hash to pick the ball off on the opposite sideline reminded me of Reggie Nelson in 2006 so much. I mean, just an elite, elite play. Then his last two drives to tie the game was something straight out of Hollywood, what Mackenzie Milton did. I mean, it was honestly like, as you're watching it, like, they're going to make a movie out of this if they win, which they didn't. Now, overtime was embarrassing for Florida State. 1st down, get to 2nd and 5. That's all you want. Unsuccessful on 2nd down, but you get it to 3rd and 4. And then on 3rd down, they blitz. They run an angle route by the tailback. You have two options. You got to throw it hot, or you have to pick it up with the running back. His responsibility is either pick up that blitzer, so the line slid right. A blitzer came from the left. You either have to block that guy with your running back or throw hot off of him. The running back didn't look hot, which I'd imagine is he had like an angle route, which a lot of times if you're hot, if that guy comes, you just keep it a flat route and throw it to him. And then I mean, it just, you had no answer. There's nowhere to go with the ball. That's not entirely on Mackenzie Milton, although he could have flipped protections and got himself protected. But it's just, you can't make mistakes like that in overtime. It was poetic though, losing on a wide left on Bobby Bowden, whatever, honoree night. And it's just unfortunate that it didn't end the other way because I think Florida State deserved it. They really did. And shout out to the Florida State fans, Florida State players, and those coaches for battling through one of the hardest transitions in college football and getting this team to buy in. And that team that you watched on Sunday night, last night, is a different football team. I mean, entirely night and day from the one that played last year. So really see them on an upwards trajectory. Now, as far as Notre Dame's concerned, I see five possible losses on this schedule. They won't lose five, but Wisconsin, Cincinnati, at Virginia Tech, after they just beat UNC, USC, and then UNC, you know, if they get their shit together, that's five potential losses. I see that at least three of those being losses, especially Cincinnati coming off the Wisconsin game, regardless if they happen to pull out a win against Wisconsin or not. That's a tough one. So I think it's going to be a rough year for Notre Dame, and a lot of people will be calling for Brian Kelly's head if he loses four of those five or three of those five. If he wins four of them and loses one, people will be happy with that. Notre Dame Nation will be happy with that, but I don't see it happening. I really don't. So what a game, though, man. What a game. I mean, that was probably my favorite game of the weekend. It was just awesome. The back and forth, the momentum shifts, it was amazing. So that was probably my favorite game. But switching gears to the Big Ten, had three huge games, right? Iowa, Indiana, huge game. Penn State, Wisconsin, huge game. Ohio State, Minnesota, huge game. We already talked about Ohio State, Minnesota, but without a doubt, the game of the week was Penn State, Wisconsin. At Wisconsin, the first and foremost, before we talk about it, I'm not kidding you. When I saw the video of Jump Around with Gus Johnson talking about how it's been 600 and whatever days since they had fans in that stadium, or what, I mean, I got teared up. Like, I literally had a tear roll down my face after all we have been through, all you as college football fans have been through, to watch that crowd jump around, just electricity shot through my body. I mean, the hairs were standing up. I had goosebumps. It was amazing. And the game didn't disappoint. I mean, offensively, it kind of did, but it was a defensive battle. And those are the two of the top 10 defenses in the country. Mark it down right now. They will end up two of the top 10 defenses in the country. You look at Wisconsin, 3 yards per carry. Penn State, 2.8 yards per carry. And the reality was this. I called it, I mean, verbatim, on the show on Friday. I hate doing that because I sound like I'm like pounding my chest. But I'm just saying, I called this shit. I told you it was going to happen. Sean Clifford outdueled Graham Mertz. That's what happened. Sean Clifford was 18 of 33, 55%, 247 yards and a touchdown. Graham Mertz, 22 of 37, 185 yards and two picks. Both were awful under pressure. Neither played well, but Sean Clifford played better than Graham Mertz. That's what happened. Mertz was 0 for 2 down the field, only had 78 yards passing on throws over 10 yards. Like, just a poor performance by a quarterback. When you watch Jack Cohn play for Notre Dame, you're sitting there like, oh, man. It's got to feel like the Bulldog fans when they watched Ohio State and Justin Fields, right? Clifford was 3 for 8. Down the field, Penn State tried to launch it. 8 throws over 20 yards where Wisconsin had 2. And the only TD that Clifford threw was a deep ball. 143 of his 247 yards were deep balls. It means he threw for 104 yards on normal throws. 104. 143 yards on deep balls, the three deep balls. So that tells you what their offense was, right? Jahan Dotson was the only person to reach the end zone in the air. 5 catches, 102 yards, 1 touchdown. As I said, he'd probably have a game, right? This was all about mistakes is what it was. This game was about, it was about ridiculously well-played defense and mistakes. Graham Mertz threw 2 picks, fumbled twice, losing one of them, and Penn State wins a huge game on the road. You can't do that. 3 turnovers from your quarterback, you lose. And here's the other thing that Wisconsin did not do well. First and second down efficiency. Sometimes if you just look at a box score, right? If you watch the game, you should be able to feel it or see it. Obviously, I'm a coach. I have that background, so I see it maybe a little better than most because I have experience. I mean, I don't know. I'm not trying to tout myself as something smarter or better than you or anyone else, but look at a box score. Wisconsin had 22 third downs. What's that tell you? First and second down were awful. They had to convert third downs to keep drives alive more so than Penn State. Penn State only had 13. 22 for Wisconsin, 13 for Penn State. That means a lot of second downs, Penn State was moving the chains. They didn't have to get to third down. So first and second down efficiency was huge in this game. Wisconsin had the ball for almost 43 minutes. Penn State only had it for 17 and won the game. Think about that. And then this is a rare, rare occurrence. You know, usually it's almost 100%, but neither team tackled exceptionally. But Penn State had more missed tackles than Wisconsin. Penn State had 14 missed tackles. Wisconsin had 10. It's a rare occurrence that the winning team has more missed tackles. It almost never happens. And the only time it does is when turnovers flip the script. And that's what happened here, right? I mean, Graham Mertz had 3 turnovers alone. I'll tell you this too about Penn State. Linebacker U has linebacker issues. Their lowest 2 graded players on defense to play over 60 snaps were their starting inside linebackers. That's so uncommon for Penn State. Usually it's skill, right? You maybe D-line. Ever since Larry Johnson left, maybe their D-line wasn't athletic and getting to the quarterback. But linebackers at Penn State? Curtis Jacobs graded 54%, and Brandon Smith was a complete liability. 51% grade. Four of the 14 missed tackles were his. He owned them. Wisconsin was 4 for 4 when attacking him in the throw game, 100% completion percentage. He was the number one liability on the defense. They're also a one cornerback team. Tyreek Castro Fields was atrocious in coverage. 6 for 6 completions. You look at like Denzel Burke from Ohio State, 3 for 8, right? They threw the shit at him, but they only completed 3 balls. That's a great day for the corner. You're going to give up some, but 6 for 6, 100%, batting 1,000 against a starting corner at Penn State. Now, Danny Davis had his way with both Tariq Castro Fields and Joey Porter Jr. He was 7 for 7, 91 yards on the pair of corners. So Danny Davis had a good game. He did. And Jahan Dotson did too. Wisconsin offensive skill is their biggest Achilles heel, but their secondary is a close second. Fayon Hicks, Caesar Williams, and Scott Nelson played poorly. So both secondaries had issues. I'm telling you, when Ohio State inevitably plays, when they play Penn State, that's a huge mismatch for Ohio State. The secondary was average at best. Joey Porter Jr. played well. He just couldn't cover Danny Davis, which is a problem because Ohio State has probably 4 receivers that are better than Danny Davis. Wisconsin, if Ohio State has to play them, who knows? Iowa, the way they looked, my gosh, they might be in the Big Ten championship game. But if Ohio State has to play Wisconsin, their Wisconsin Achilles heel is their secondary, is their offensive skill, but their secondary is a close second. That bodes really well for Ohio State. Mistakes killed the Badgers. Simple as that. That's why they lost the game. You drop a road game to a conference opponent, big game, you can't have turnovers. You can't miss tackles. And they did. They did. So Penn State gets a huge win. You like easy money? Thanks to MyBookie and their lock of the season, if either team scores in the NFL season opener, you win. If you didn't know, a game hasn't ended 0-0 since World War II, so this is a sure bet. Head to mybookie.ag, select the lock of the season, and if any team scores between the Dallas Cowboys and the Tampa Bay Bucks, you win. The best bet you can make is one that you can't lose. MyBookie is also playing host to several exclusive contests, including their $100,000 Super Contest. It only costs $10 to enter. There's big money on the line this season, so don't wait to get in the game. Join now. Head to mybookie.ag today and use our promo code MENACE, M-E-N-A-C-E, and instantly receive double your first deposit. That's double your funds to double your winnings. Again, that's promo code MENACE to receive double your first deposit and get started with MyBookie today. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie. Now to the game of the week outside of the ones we talked about. There's so many games of the week, I don't know which one. Obviously, Clemson, Georgia, biggest game of the weekend. Huge top 5 matchup, and it was ugly. I mean, it was ugly. DJ Uiagalelei was bad. I mean, opposite of great QB play. That's what he played. Most will say that. I'm going to tell you why, right? He did not play well. I'm going to tell you why he didn't play well. Great quarterbacks play well under pressure, right? If you listen to this podcast for the last 2.5 years, you know the type of year Joe Burrow had, where if teams pressured him, his numbers went up. Same for Trevor Lawrence. Same for Justin Fields. Those great quarterbacks, when you get blitzed, they thrive. Tua Tagovailoa, Mac Jones, same. When pressure comes, they make you pay because you're missing people in coverage. You sent them to blitz, right? DJ Uiagalelei, 27% completion percentage, and his one interception was when he was pressured. That's just atrocious. That is below average quarterback play. The other way to evaluate quarterbacks is downfield throws and outside the hashes. He was 2 for 8 on those throws, 25%. 1 for 4 on deep balls, which you want at least at 50%. So really bad. Over 10 yards, he was 3 for 12, 25% for 80 yards. You take out the deep balls from 10 to 20 yards throws, the depth, he was 1 for 8 for 12 yards total. That is atrocious quarterback play. He needed play action to open up his receivers, so that speaks to the receiver skill set, right? 83% of his complete, he had an 83% completion percentage when he had ran play action plays, right, to suck up the defense, to open up the zones bigger, because he's not as accurate or as polished or as well of a thrower, 83% on play action versus 45% on dropback. Think about it. It's not that hard, right? If he catches a snap, dropbacks and pass, what does the defense do? They bail and get in their pass zones, or they focus on their coverage responsibilities. It's harder for a quarterback to attack that defense throwing the ball, but the great ones can still do it. They can pick apart your defense, right? On play action, a lot like Tim Tebow, if people want to watch Tim Tebow highlights. Hard play action would just pop guys wide open and he could throw and hit them, right? Because he doesn't have to be as accurate. You kind of lob it and let them run under it. 83% versus 45%, almost a double production percentage increase when in play action. But those play actions, problem being, they were not collecting yards. At 31 yards on play actions on five catches. So he was completing them, but they weren't marching down the field with them. And to be honest, Clemson's pass pro was disgusting. Their offensive line was disgusting. They allowed 20 quarterback pressures, 12 QB hurries, and 7 sacks. Now, as ugly as their protection was, let's also speak to the fact that Georgia was absolutely getting after their ass. Georgia's defense was the most impressive thing I saw all weekend, by far. I mean, it was like, holy shit. Like, you did not want to be on the field on offense with that defense on the field. They were coming after their ass. And as you watch the film, the right side of Clemson's line had major issues. Will Putnam and Walker Parks were like the Berlin Wall in 1989. I mean, the ball was snapped and they were coming down every time. 11 quarterback pressures, 7 hurries, 4 sacks just between those two on the right side. DJ Uiagalelei had a problem on his right side, bad. Good news, it was in his face. If it's the left side of your line, you're getting smacked in the back of the head, you lose all confidence. So at least he saw them, right? It was in his face. Jordan McFadden, their left tackle, was the sole bright spot on the line, and this problem will not go away anytime soon. He was outstanding in pass pro, outstanding in the run game, problem being the other four were fucking terrible. Jordan McFadden played at an elite level that Clemson is used to when they had Jackson, Carmen, and you know everyone was playing well together. Jordan McFadden played elite, exceptional. The other four, I mean, just disgusting. Compare all of that to Georgia only allowing 3 total pressures and 1 sack in the game. Albeit, the main reason, JT Daniels. He got rid of the ball. And we'll talk about it in a minute, but he was not going to take a sack. He was on time. He was getting it out. And that's what DAJ Uiagalelei did not do. But he's young. Give him time. I get it. To be fair, and I'm blaming this solely on Georgia missing damn near every offensive weapon, JT Daniels attempted 0 passes over 20 yards and was 0-for-4 outside the hashes over 10 yards. So he couldn't do anything. He couldn't throw it a lot. They didn't throw it down the field. They didn't throw intermediate routes. So there's a little bit of a 2 sides to the story, right? Like, they didn't give up many pressures or sacks. JT Daniels got the ball out of his hands, but they also didn't throw it down the field and didn't make any tough throws. So JT Daniels impressed me solely, not his production. Not because of that, but he was on time, got the ball out of his hands, and survived. 1.88 seconds. That's how long JT Daniels had the ball in his hands. Think about that now. Without an offensive line sitting there, if JT Daniels snaps the ball, catches it at 5 yards, takes a 3-step drop to, let's say, 8, how many guys can really get from the line of scrimmage to 8 yards in 1.88 seconds with no one blocking them, right? You have to react to the snap, so some guys can run 8 yards in 1.88 seconds, but with the reaction time on a snap, I don't know if, I mean, maybe in the A-gaps, but off the edge, I mean, you're talking about they have to sprint 10, 11 yards in 1.88 seconds with reading a snap. It's not going to happen. So that was mostly scheme and JT Daniels that thwarted that pass rush. But I'm not going to crucify Georgia yet until I see who comes back healthy so they can actually operate a full offense. They have a manageable schedule to heal up the O. UAB, South Carolina, Vanderbilt, and Arkansas before they have to travel to Auburn on October 9th. When they go to Auburn October 9th, they better have some offensive firepower. The other kind of, here's some key stats to this game. Clemson, and everyone's talked about this, so this is not going to be shocking. Clemson rushed for 2 yards, 2 total yards on the game. 0.1 yards per carry. Lynn J. Dixon, who was supposed to be the starter, I know they didn't really name one, he had 1 carry on the game. And missed tackles, Clemson, Brent Venables, 7 missed tackles, respectable. Georgia, This is against Clemson now. Clemson used to be like basketball on grass, freak show, Sammy Watkins, right? DeAndre Hopkins, Travis Etienne. I mean, just freak shows everywhere, right? It used to be. T. Higgins, Justin Ross in his prime, I guess. Georgia had four missed tackles on the entire game against a talented offense. You talk about speaking to the talent and execution of Georgia's defense. Kirby Smart has a defense now, a real one. Third and fourth downs, Clemson was 5 of 17, 29%. Georgia, 7 of 15, 47%. 7 of 15 is going to put you in the top 15 in the country. 47% is. 29% is awful. So Georgia couldn't convert. This was a defensive battle mixed with two extremely inept offenses. Clemson and DJ Uiagalelei made one critical mistake, and it cost them, right? He threw the pick six that was the only score of the game. This Georgia team has the defense to make some serious noise, but only if they get some weapons healthy. Simply a solid defense or a great defense won't make it out of the SEC, let alone compete in the playoffs. They need to score. The trend in college football the last 5 years is explosive offenses. From Trevor Lawrence when they won it, Alabama with Mac Jones when they won it, beat Ohio State, right? Joe Burrow, LSU when they won it. It's explosive offenses win national titles, right? They need to at least have some form of explosion on offense to couple with that defense. But that defense, impressive. Zamir White looked solid, considering there was zero threat of pass for the Clemson defense. I mean, they literally knew JT Daniels was not going to throw the ball down the field. They didn't have receivers that could get open down the field. And so they really locked in on the quick game, short touches, quick touches to the skill players, and Zamir White running the ball. They did. With zero threat of pass, he still had almost 6 yards of carry on 13 carries. So he looked good if they can get a pass game. The moral story is this. That defense looked like the best unit I saw all weekend. Not sure they will have enough scoring power, but I love JT Daniels in his minimal role, and I would like to see that expand as they get some health at the receiver position. I like Zamir White. This team could become something if they find a way to make plays on the perimeter and throw it down the field and get healthy. Simple as that. Great weekend of college football. The one I do want to kind of go back and touch on the Ohio State-Minnesota game because I already broke it down on Friday, kind of gave you my instant reaction, my thoughts. I wanted to give you a little analytics behind it and give you my second look thoughts after rewatching it. First of all, starting with the man that is going to run the show, C.J. Stroud. We already talked about it, struggled in the first half, came out the second half and made five unbelievable throws. That's why they won the game, right? Some analytics behind it, 43% completion percentage on non-screens. So when it wasn't a screen, didn't even complete half of his passes. That needs to improve. 25% on intermediate throws, right? 10 to 20 yards. That's abysmal. Has to do better on those intermediate throws. And 42% under pressure. We already talked about it. That is the mark of a great QB. Do you elevate your level of play and make a defense pay under pressure? Because think about it now. What does that do to the defense? They don't want to blitz. Joe Burrow at LSU, no one wanted to blitz him because they knew they were going to pay of the ultimate price. They were going to die on the field, right? They couldn't blitz him. If C.J. Stroud is getting defeated by blitzes, Ohio State's going to see more and more. Then the offensive line is going to have to deal with more and more. It's hard to pick up pressures. You need the quarterback to gash defenses that pressure. And that's going to be the Achilles heel. All in all, though, I thought he had a really solid game. He showed he could battle through adversity, came out the second half, and won the damn game. Met expectations, but didn't exceed expectations. Well, realistic expectations. I know some Buckeye fans, as with any fan base, your expectations are lofty to be nice, right? But he met my expectations. He didn't exceed them. I thought he would struggle. I said that in the offseason. This kid has the hardest first two games of any rookie quarterback that I can remember, right? On the road at Minnesota against a pretty good team in his first start. Then he has to come back, and thank God Oregon looked like shit. We'll talk about that in the second game or second episode this week. But it's still a tough game. Oregon coming to town. I mean, you see those Phil Knight uniforms flying around. It's not going to be easy. It's tough. Watching the offensive line play, I mean, six quarterback pressures on the game and no sacks. Got to be happy, right? They didn't overly impress me in pass pro, but they also didn't have any major issues, right? Center, still a weakness. Hard to not be, though, with the other four that are around Luke Weipler or Harry Miller, whoever that center is going to be. But the center is still a weakness. Now, I will say this. I talked about it preseason, predicted it, heard this, and been hearing it for a long time. DeJuan Jones is an absolute lottery pick in the NFL. Top 10 pick, top 5 pick, you name it. He's an absolute road grader in the run game. Athletic as shit. Long, big, heavy-handed, you name it. He is a dude. Offensive skill, I mean, we all know. Had some drop issues, right? Garrett had two. Olave had one. Jackson Smith and Jigba was only targeted twice, right? So had some, a little bit of issues. Maybe game one jitters, whatever you want to call it. My only issue was Jeremy Ruckert only had one target, and I'm going to keep singing this narrative until I'm proven wrong or it happens, right? I did it all last year, and when they started throwing the ball to the tight ends, what happened? They beat Clemson, right? They started playing at a new level. Ruckert had one target. They need to get him more involved. He's too good of a player. He played really well. Switching over to the defensive side of the ball, tackling needs to improve. 9 missed tackles, especially against the skill at Minnesota. Now, Mo Ibrahim, like, I get it. Great player. Everyone else, average at best. 9 missed tackles will get them beat against a better team, like Penn State here in a couple months, right? Cody Simon is an absolute dude. I love him. I think I misspoke his name on the Friday episode just because I'm get kind of fired up. Cody Simon was a stud. I love him. As is Taraja Mitchell. Those two, an inside linebacker, I'll take them all day, every day. Roll them on the field. Let's go. Denzel Burke is going to be very good. Minnesota went after him, right? 8 targets, but only 3 completions. For a young kid like that, he held his own. He'll face much better skill at receiver. The only issue, right? The receivers that he was going against were not great. They were not great players. He's going to face better. When he has to go cover Jahan Dotson or, you know, let's say Danny Davis if Wisconsin makes it to the Big Ten, that's a whole different world. But guess what? He knows that. You know who he goes against every day in practice? Just look at the offense at Ohio State. He knows that. He needs to get a lot better when he faces better skill at receiver. So he needs to develop. That should go without saying, but after last year, I'm saying it. These DBs need to develop. If this is the starting point and they get developed all year long, like should happen, Ohio State's going to be in great shape. I mean, this secondary needs 7 Banks and Cameron Brown back. They do. They really need Josh Proctor's injury to be anything but serious. Even if it's a 4-week injury, 6-week injury, that kid cannot be out for the year with some bad shoulder separation or a collarbone break. It just can't be that. Knock on wood again. More to come later on that in the week. I haven't heard anything about it, but I will find out. But that has to be the case to go where Buckeye fans want to go. 7 Banks, Cameron Brown have to play. Right? Then Ryan Watts, Denzel Burke, feel great. 4 corners deep. Right? With Ronnie Hickman playing, and then if Josh Proctor can be healthy at some point before they need to go on a run, you feel great about where this defense could go if developed. And that's where I'm at right now for the Buckeyes. I think it was a solid game one. You can't be mad about it. I know everyone wanted the Alabama performance, but this is not the Alabama roster. They had a lot of stuff to fix with a rookie quarterback, and Bryce Young just looked like a dude. And I didn't break that down. I probably should have. Maybe I will in the next episode because, my gosh. The only thing I will say, last thing I will say, Jameson Williams, I'm not going to be that negative Nancy that says, you know, he was the 3rd best receiver. I'm telling you, he has a skill set that no one at Ohio State has. I'm not saying that Olave and Garrett Wilson are not better than him. I'm not saying that. They probably are better than him as receivers, right? But Jameson Williams has an insane skill set that no one else at Ohio State has. And you saw it against Miami on his 90-whatever-yard touchdown. That kid is a freak, and it pains me to watch him succeed for Alabama. I am going to be livid if Ohio State plays Alabama again and that kid torches us. Livid. Livid that we didn't hold on to him. Alabama had 4 first-round receivers in the same room. You telling me we couldn't have had 4? Because right now it looks like we have 3 high draft pick receivers. Why couldn't we have a 4th? Get him involved. Right? Rotate him in. Give him a skill set, a package, or, you know, just use him on deep balls. I don't know. That's what I think should have happened. So, anyways, had to get my rant out of the way. Wanted to also shout out Jameson. I mean, I'm rooting for him. I hope you guys are too. I hope Buckeye Nation is rooting for that kid to become, you know, the Heisman winner like Devontae Smith, because that's what he deserves if he works hard. And whether he does it there or here, we had the chance to do it here. So that's what I'm hoping for. But anyways, a lot of games broken down. And man, if every weekend is like that, I'm going to be working a lot harder, but it's going to be awesome, awesome episodes and awesome content, and I'm here for it. So thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. As always, I appreciate you. If you haven't yet, get your tickets to hang out the Point on Lane right on the corner by the horseshoe at Charging on Lane on Eventbrite, on my social media, Braxton's social media. Check out Patreon. Do your deal. Support the show. Appreciate y'all. Hope you appreciate the show. Hope it was entertaining. Hope you enjoyed my insight. And if you didn't, as we say, go fuck yourself, San Diego.
Watches downfield. It's Olave. He's got a touchdown, Ohio State.
Why am I talking to you? You're not even in football.
Yeah.
Did you even play to the high school level? You took journalism. It's a bunch of nerds interrupting people who know what they're doing.
It goes to the corner, dives to the corner. He didn't get there. No, they say he did. And Indiana wins.
The commissioner could literally punt a baby with his wingtips on. I'm still going to watch on Sunday.
Looking for the deep ball.
I don't condone the man's actions, but it's football. I have to watch it. This is all I have.
On first down, it's Breece Hall. He doesn't go down. He might go all the way. He stays on his feet again and scores.
I wasn't going to hit a woman, but then that guy in the Ravens did it, so I guess it's okay.